Wisconsin incarcerates a higher percentage of black men than any other state in the country. For the past few months, we've been exploring why this is and what this means to Milwaukee. Today, we'll talk in depth about the impact on our community.
Our Project Milwaukee show today is coming to you live from the Wisconsin Black Historical Society Museum at 27th and Center on Milwaukee's north side. We're in one of the neighborhoods that sees a disproportionate number of its men spend time in prison. We have a live audience with us today to join in the conversation.
And we invite you to take part in this conversation, too. You can follow along on Twitter at hashtag Prison Impact or at facebook.com/WUWM Radio. We have four people on the panel to share a variety of perspectives, from a prosecutor who locked up the offenders to two people who spent time in prison and a clergyman who has seen his congregation affected. The Reverend Willie Briscoe is president of MICA, Milwaukee Inner City Congregations Allied for Hope. Since 2009, Briscoe has been an associate minister of the New Covenant Baptist Church. Briscoe was called to the ministry in 2008 after a 25-year career in law enforcement and corrections. Reverend Briscoe was born in Mississippi and is a graduate of Milwaukee's North Division High School.
The Reverend Mark Benjamin Evans is a Milwaukee native. He dropped out of college in 1985. In 1988, he was incarcerated for property crimes and assault, and 4 years later, he went to prison for charges related to having non-consensual sex with a former girlfriend. While in prison, Evans became a Christian and obtained a doctorate of divinity. A jury ordered his release in 2011. Today, he's starting a business, writing an autobiography, and is chair of the Faith Committee of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative.
Tory Johnson was born in Milwaukee and spent much of his youth in the city. He became involved in gangs and criminal activity as a teen. At the age of 25, Johnson was charged with first-degree intentional homicide. He received a 10-year sentence after pleading guilty to a lesser charge. Johnson spent most of his adult life in and out of prison before turning his life around. For the last 6 years, he's worked for Wisconsin Community Services. He currently splits his time among programs at the Holton Youth and Family Center.
And E. Michael McCann was Milwaukee County's district attorney from 1968 to 2006. After retiring from public service, McCann joined Marquette University Law School, where he became a Bowdoin Teaching Fellow and an adjunct professor of law. McCann holds a Master of Laws degree from the Harvard University Law School and honorary degrees from Marquette and Marion College. Welcome to all four of you.
Thank you.
Now, let's begin with the question that a lot of people may be asking themselves. Why should we care about the percentage of black men in prison? Why is this of any importance to the people who aren't directly affected? Anybody can answer that?
I can. It's a waste of a human being. It's a human being who could contribute to the society, support a family, hold a job, and enrich the society by their presence. Or be a drag on a society. A person going into prison becomes a burden to the whole society. The waste of that of those resources, I think, is the most. And of course, the prison is a terrible place to spend time. So every effort across the board, no matter where it may be, should be made to prevent people, persuade people not to go to prison, not to do things that will put them in prison.
Do you agree? Is it a waste of a perfectly good man to send someone to prison?
It is indeed a waste, but it's a disproportionate amount of black men going into prison compared to other races. So it shows something that we don't like to talk about again. It shows that there's still racism in society. It shows that there's still segregation in society. And it shows that there's one segment of our population that is not growing because the men are not present. And it's not going to succeed without men in the household and men contributing in the community. So if these men are disproportionately in the correctional system, it's going to show that it's going to affect the neighborhoods. They're not going to be healthy. Families are what makes community.
Mark Evans and Tory Johnson, what do you think when you hear someone talk about prison in the context of being a waste, a potential waste of a person?
For me, I just understand a little differently. They don't know. I don't think at some rate it's a disappointment, and it's not our natural habitat to be locked away, but there has to be consequences to behavior in order for behavior to change. If there is no consequence to behavior, the behavior is not going to change. But I don't think it's a waste. I think it's a wake-up call if you will, in a human and other humans that's not directly, I don't think not directly involved is a good phrase to put, because we're all directly involved. It's not one race or another. In my eyesight, it's human race. So I think everyone is directly involved. And so we all should put our energies towards trying to re-baseline that life.
I believe it's a waste if you believe in the word corrections, because there's nothing there that the Department of Corrections put in place for a person that's in prison to correct their life. You know, it's not a waste if the person wake up and realize that he can love himself and save himself, and he wake up and do something to better himself. But if you just say, lock him up and that's it, then it's a waste, because we coming back.
Does this have an impact on not just the people whose relatives are put in prison or the people in a particular neighborhood? Does it have an impact on the larger society of Southeast Wisconsin?
Yes, it does, because these people are sometimes disposed of. What I mean by disposed of, once they're put in prison, they have a stigma attached to them. Then we tell them, all right, straighten yourself up, get your life back on track, but we attach an anvil to their back when they come out that will keep them hindered for the rest of their life. They're considered a felon. They're considered black when it's, well, they're considered a ne'er-do-well, and they are last to be hired. And then at every job they go to, they have to sign a slip stating that I was once a felon or incarcerated, which puts them behind the curve. There's no particular race in society that is going to fail and not affect the entire society. We're all bound together by that web of connectivity that Dr. King talked about. So if the black man fails, eventually the whole society will fail.
Michael McCann, does the criminal justice system look at community impact when it decides how to prosecute a crime? Does it look beyond just the criminal and the victim to what the impact on society at large will be from putting someone away?
Yes, but it also looks at what the impact will be if the person is not put away. What's the impact on the community of having people that are going around shooting people or drug dealing in a high quantity? That has an impact. I think that comes first to the attention of the criminal justice system. What negatively is happening and how do we deal with that? I think people generally look to the school system and other systems to make the positive contributions, but I think it's more a case of what happens if you don't, that the attention of the criminal justice system is drawn to a crime problem more than saying, all right, what will be the impact? It's how do we address this crime problem? And if it becomes incarceration, that's the impact we're talking about to some extent. But I think the attention is focused on the crime. That's the criminal justice system's first view.
Before going into prison, do people think about those consequences? When they're going to commit whatever it is they're going to do, do they say, this could send me to prison, or isn't that part of what they think of?
I don't know. It's according to what your mindset is, because like when I was doing what I was doing, you don't think about prison, because prison don't mean nothing. You know, it's according to what you call first and burl line. That might be prison to us. You know what I'm saying? This prison is like a state of mind. We're already locked up. So actually, you kind of saved us, because I get 3 meals a day, recreation, you get your teeth fixed or whatever, you get, you know what I'm saying? So a lot of people is in a better situation in prison than they is out here, but who set that tone of how the community is, you know? So yeah, you don't really think about that, because you hate everybody. So if I hate myself, then I'm going to hate you. So, you know, you don't think about it. It's like you just go and do what you do, and then whatever the consequences is, the consequences. Because all the consequences is after the crime. It ain't before the crime.
Mark Evans, how do you make the case that what happens to you and people in your community makes a difference to people outside? There are probably people listening to this broadcast who live in Brookfield or Oak Creek or outside the city of Milwaukee, and they might say, you know, this isn't about me, this is about them. How do you make the case that it is about them as well?
Well, the example I could give people is that when we're sick, we all seek medical attention. So when you're sick, you go to a hospital, you go to a physician, but until it happens to you or someone in your family, your concern is not there. But as the rate of the United States is going, at this rate, we became the lockup country in the world. As Wisconsin is the number one lockup country, state in America for black males. But we 6% of the population and the most incarcerated. So when I was in prison, all I saw was black males. That's amazing. So I would say somewhere along the line, somebody's family is going to be incarcerated and they have to deal with the tough issues of that. But a lot of time people, we don't deal with or even know or can articulate what our needs are. So a lot of times we don't even think about others. We just think about ourselves. And as long as it's not happening to us or to me, then my concern is limited, very limited.
Right. That's almost like when you watch the news and a shooting happened in the suburbs. They say, I don't think it ain't never should happen in our neighborhood. I never thought that. I don't know why you didn't think it had happened in your neighborhood. It happened in everybody else's neighborhood. Or even with the heroin. I'm be 50 this year. Heroin been in our neighborhood all my life. And now all of a sudden it's on the news. Heroin, like it just happened yesterday. You know, because it's in the suburbs. But it's always been in the suburbs. It was just that now your kids using it instead of just pushing it to other people's kids.
Mr. McCann, when you were dealing with cases in the criminal justice system, what kind of discretion did you have in sentencing men to prison?
Pretty broad discretion. There are some cases that where there's a mandatory imprisonment, but for many cases there's broad discretion for the district attorney what to recommend. And the judge, of course, does the sentencing. The DA does not do the sentencing. So there's broad discretion within a district, and charging as well, charging decisions, recommendations, and so on.
Reverend Briscoe, you talked about what you see as the inherent racism of the system, that so many more black men are being sent to prison than people of other races, and there is clearly a disproportionate amount of black men who are sent to prison, especially in this state. But how much is about sentencing and how much is about who's committing crimes? There are people who bring up the issue that, yes, there are a lot of black men who are in prison, but there are also a lot of black men who have committed crimes.
First of all, I want to go back to the other question you mentioned. It's the state of Wisconsin prison system, not the city of Milwaukee prison system. That is why the whole state is affected. When you have less access and less opportunity that is centered on one part of the city, you're going to have more hopelessness and more despair than you're going to have in the more affluent parts of the city. When you commit more resources to the affluent parts of your city than you do to the impoverished part of your city, then the people who are impoverished are going to act out and they're going to respond to what resources they have and what access they have. Now, this is not excusing crime in no way, shape, or form, because I've seen people who I knew that prison was meant for them. But when you have a disproportionate amount of people who are going to prison for lesser crimes and for lesser activities, and you see the same people in Brookfield who are getting house arrest or who are getting electronic surveillance, and then you see someone in the inner city getting 9 months or a year for that same crime, there's no way that you can say that it's not racist or it's not disproportionate. So what we are saying is that you have a situation that needs more resources bestowed upon it than you have on the outlying areas. When you have people who are sentenced to prison and they don't get any help, get any treatment, or get any educational advancement, then you're releasing the same person in prison that you put out of prison, that you put in prison, and you're expecting him to do different. That is not going to happen. Only way that prison will cure crime is if you sentence people to life. Everyone that is coming out of prison should come out with a better advantage than they had when they went in.
What's the purpose of incarceration? Is it punishment? Is it correction? Is it rehabilitation? Why do people get sentenced to prison?
I think it's all of those, Joanne. It isn't the disjunctive, it's all of them. People who became critical, I don't want to be unfair to the system, it's referred to as the Wisconsin correctional system. Some people disagree with that. There's no question over the years, as we all saw as incarceration rose, less and less resources went, I believe, to rehabilitation in terms of drug treatment programs and so on. But punishment certainly is part of it. But the hope is, of society and the structure, the hopeful structure, the idea is that there'll be rehabilitation for that person, that they will come out a different person. But that means resources, and that means a commitment to society, ready to commit substantial resources for those reforms. And we've been in an era in the last 20 years where there isn't a lot of that.
Tory Johnson and Mark Evans, did anything, any part of your prison experience make you less likely to return to prison after it was over?
Yeah, I guess after a while, I tell you, it's got to be like, I don't know, I say like, I went to a program called Choice Program. And the only reason I went to that program was because somebody convinced me to go and I could get out early. And it kind of gave me some tools that I already knew, but now I could actually practice them for 6 to 9 months. Then I got out and returned, but I still had them tools to fall back on that I never allowed to be put inside me because I had people around me that were still trying to get that. But to me, I think that prison is like being in prison more than once, more than twice, more than three times, that it's like set up, you know, because you see where the prison's at all up north. And the farms, and I remember somebody walked outside and was like, they sniffed, they said they smelled some boo-boo, and then the guard sniffed and said he smelled money, and then when I went back to my cell, I realized that we were the money, and we was the boo-boo that he was smelling. And if you go to Walpine and watch Dodge, Walpine, Bunkhouse, Fox Lakes, and see everybody got third shift, it's set up for them people to have jobs. You know what I'm saying? We do commit crime, but like I work in Harambe and River West. But like the Reverend said, if you don't put nothing in Harambe, we gonna go in River West and take something. You ain't gonna have your laptop and your barbecue, and I ain't gonna have none. You know, so it's set up like that. You know what I'm saying? But it's system set up like I think it's 22,000 or more people in prison. It's over 5,000 people that employed by the Department of Correction, and I ain't counting the POs and all that. And then it's like 70,000 people on probation and parole, so it's just too much money. I went from the police station to county jail to MSDF to Dodge Correctional to way up to Antigo. Everybody was getting paid off of just one person. You know what I'm saying? Antigo, Wisconsin got like 200 people in their county jail, their state prisoners. And I was like, how y'all get all these people in here with this little town? And it's because they getting paid. Everybody got jobs. And they thank you for coming. You know what I'm saying?
Michael McCann, I assume you didn't think of in terms of the economies of the places where the prisons are, but there is a lot of infrastructure right now that goes along with supporting such a large prison population.
There is just I certainly made an effort to push to have a prison built in Milwaukee. You may recall the area was selected in the area not far from the ballpark. That became a political issue against Earl, that they was going to put a prison right in Milwaukee, and that ads were run against that, attacking that. And I had argued and that there were ministries here that could, families that would make a difference to have the prison here in Wisconsin, at least in Milwaukee. That there was strong political opposition to that. So the people aren't looking for jobs here in Milwaukee for that. They're looking, well, what will be the impact of that be? I do think certainly there's communities that have those prisons that economically benefit from it. Local, ideally the prison should be near the prisoners where the person comes from. So the guards have the culture. There are very few black guards. What black guard wants to live in Waupun or Antigo or something like that? So, or ministries, the reach out. So there's no question there should be, but that was tried here. The attempt was made. There was fierce political opposition. You may recall Earl was defeated. Some said, don't close Green Bay, get rid of Earl. So that attempt, and there was actually space purchased by the Division of Corrections that was beaten down politically.
As you probably heard, we have a live studio audience. Well, it's not a studio, it's here in the Wisconsin Black Historical Society, a really big room. And we have quite a big audience here. And we welcome your questions, too. The microphone's right there, so come up if you have a question. And, of course, those of you listening live on the radio can get a hold of us via Twitter, hashtag Prison Impact. And we may take a few questions through that, too. But we have people here who have questions who have already come to the microphone. Good morning.
Hi, my name is Andrea Brown, and I have a family member that's been locked up for 27 years. And he's been past his mandatory release date. and the parole system is holding a lot of guys past their release date, and not our parole system has slowed down a lot. So what do we do as a community to help parole facilitate getting these people back out on the street so they can be positive people in the community?
One of the things that I think has affected imprisonment was in fact that the issues of a parole, how many people under the system that was adopted, I've forgotten exactly what year it was, they did away with parole to an extent. So it was the parole board was stripped of authority to release people. Truth in Sentencing came online, and there was very little that the parole board could do. If it was within the last 7 years, that may have been for a crime committed much earlier, then you'd be sentenced under that old law. But most Truth in Sentencing definitely impacted on having more people in prison. The prison sentences were longer, people were held and detained longer. And there was a time when parole, when a lot of people were released on parole, but that, again, there was a political opposition rose to it. Truth in Sentencing came online. I can remember exactly when it did. Governor Doyle, then Attorney General Doyle, called me and said he would like to support Truth in Sentencing up to 80%. You served 80%. When I appeared at a press conference with them, I said I would not do that. Then the governor, Thompson, like 2 weeks later, said we'll have Truth in Sentencing, but it's 100% time, no 80% time. So that has definitely impacted on the parole was a. There definitely is much less parole releases, no question about it.
Before we take another question from the audience, let me ask Willie Briscoe. Reverend Briscoe, are we talking about two different sets of criminals here? I mean, is anyone saying that violent crime should go unpunished or punished in a different way from one community to the next? Are we talking about drug crimes on one hand, for example, and violent crimes on another?
First of all, you have to look at the entire correctional system. For over 200 years, we've known that this has been a failed system that we've been supporting, and nobody has changed it. No one is saying that there's no prison time that a crime does not warrant. We are saying to be more civil and more humane in sentencing and to be more practical in who you're putting in prison and why you're putting them in prison. First of all, you should put a person in prison till you should realize, is this to protect the community? And is this person a threat to the community? Is this a person a threat to themselves? And if you can't answer those two things liably, then you need to find a way to treat that individual. The way we are incarcerating people now, calling it corrections, is a farce. The incarceration time is the punishment. If you don't think that incarceration itself is punishment, lock yourself in the room for a day and tell yourself you can't go anywhere. Now multiply that by thousands. That is punishment. If you do not give these people provisions when they're behind bars and give them the corrective treatment, to give them the resources they need to become viable in the community, then you just have a recidivism process that's going to feed itself continuously. So. Yes, there is a need for incarceration for some people, but if those people are coming back to the community, you have to provide a way for them to have a means to alter their lives and to make a living for themselves.
Joel Wenger, with MICA and with Wisdom, the statewide organization. I think most people in this room, and certainly the panel members, know about MICA's and Wisdom's 11 by 15 campaign, which is a campaign to reduce prison population in Wisconsin to 11,000. That means cutting it in half by 2015. And people who hear that think that's wild-eyed idealism at best and some crazy plan at worst. But we believe that our prison incarceration rate in Wisconsin should not be any much different from Minnesota's, and that would be bringing it in line. So the question is, what are a couple of the areas that we in MICA and in Wisdom, which is all over the state of Wisconsin, people all over the state are enraged by these rates that are out of line. What are the two or three areas that we ought to focus on to bring about the change and to solve what obviously is a system that is not working the way it should?
Well, Pastor Elwinger just threw me a softball.
Really?
Knocked it out the park.
You can tell we worked together, so he kind of set that one up. For the first time in history, our correctional budget has exceeded the UW system budget, which means that we're more willing to send someone to prison and pay for them rather than we are to send someone to college and pay their tuition. Because 1 year in prison will pay about four people's years, a whole year of college tuition. So it is financially feasible for us to find an alternative that a state right next door to us has found. They have stopped incarcerating people for nonviolent crimes, for addictions, for alcohol addiction, for mental illness. They have found treatment for those individuals, and it's working because their budget is less than half of ours. But we still want to say, well, we are tough on crime, and we want to lock people up and throw away the key. Well, people don't disappear when they go behind bars. It costs to keep those people behind bars. Truth in sentencing is costing us a ton of money, destroying a ton of lives. And until we get more, what you might say, in the 20th century about incarceration and about treatment, we're going to wind up paying triple what we are today.
Mr. McCann, you talked about the political complications that come in to budgets and where to place prisons. What about the whole issue of being tough on crime? Is that really a political issue, or do we really want to be tough on crime, and that's why we put so many people in prison?
Well, it's. I had a chance to look at the, not in great depth, at the Minnesota thing, and it seemed to me that they were bringing much more talent, particularly of property crime. I didn't think a big disparity in violent crime. I don't think there was a big disparity. But in Wisconsin, it'd be one or two or three times you commit property offenses, and then you'd be sent to prison. It seemed to me much more tolerant of that offense in Minnesota. There's no question. There's a political, you know, Democrats forever are accused of being soft on crime, and that's a reality. That became I think that really rose in the 90s as crime rates rose. That became. They seem to be connected in the 80s and 90s, that idea that it was a political impact, and people were afraid of being soft on crime. I can remember running where you think sometimes governors or presidents were depicted at one point as running, decked out as sheriffs, running for president of the United States. So there's no question that has had an impact. And that what the legislation is, why we haven't gotten rid of truth in sentencing, even the modest changes have been challenged. As I recall, the limited authority that there is for a parole board, that that's being used very, very, very tightly. And I think definitely there's some political aspect of it.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention that we will be holding a town hall meeting on specifically on solutions to this issue on May 22nd at the downtown Milwaukee Public Library. And so hopefully we can get into some of these potential solutions in greater depth on that day. But for now, let's take more questions from the audience.
Hi, I am Crystal West. A lot of you probably know me because I work on a lot of different organizations in the highest disparity zip code, 06. Not only do we have the largest incarceration rate, but we have the largest of health disparities. So here's my question. We say that we are not looking to be soft on crime, but yet half of the people who are incarcerated are for nonviolent crimes. We say that we want to help our community, but yet young men who are struggling to already feed and take care of their families, you know, the basics, food, shelter, clothing, things of that nature that every human being should have. But yet we punish them when they say, okay, I have a 2-year-old child. I can only get so much food from the church. I can only get so much money from the blood bank. I go to jobs every day. This is what I'm hearing from our clients. We're Free at Last Ministries. They go to jobs every day, every session. They walk when they don't have transportation. So here's the problem. We're saying we want to help, but yet where's really the help? When a program does come up and it's a great program, all of a sudden funding is socked. No funding. So when we're talking to these young men and we say, why do they have so many gun charges? These are men in a jungle, literally a jungle.
Because when you walk down the street, and I never believed this until it happened, I was walking with a group of young men who all of a sudden another man jumped out and said, "What set you claiming?" I'm like, "Really? I thought that was the early 80s. And he's like, "No, what set y'all claiming? Y'all can't walk through this neighborhood." Pulled out and brandished a gun and said, "You can't come past here." I was like, "You have been lost your mind. I live on 10th and Burleigh. I've lived there for 10 years. And there's no way you're going to tell me I can't come. So if you're going to shoot me now. And I'll let God work it out." But the other young man was saying, "See what we go through? Now, if you wouldn't have been standing right here, we'd be three-shot people." Their fear and our fear is two totally different things. Young men in this community now are being hunted like animals and then locked away like animals and then released, and they can't take care of their families like animals. And when we say it wouldn't happen in other neighborhoods, that's because here's the reality. It's not allowed in other neighborhoods.
Is this a reality that she's talking about? Is this a reality that you have experienced?
Of course. As we sit right here, this neighborhood is called the zoo. It's called the zoo for a good reason. I don't think the former DA would feel comfortable walking down Burleigh at 8 o'clock in the evening. But let's just face it and call it what it is. It's a business, and the product is young black males. And whether they're out there defending themselves or trying to find a job or get something to eat, the odds are stacked against them. There is no resources for them. If there is some resources, like she said, the programs they go to, the funding stops. It's a business. We already know since the 60s that rehabilitation or severe punishment has rehabilitated less than 1%. We knew that with Alcatraz. So we already know that locking them up and throwing away the key doesn't work. Severe punishment doesn't work. Everybody pays. Everybody pays for the business, but only certain people.
But let me ask, would the availability of more social programs, food, health programs, would that keep people from wanting to shoot each other?
Yeah.
Resources.
Yeah, but like he said, and then I know a lot of people know that the 27th Street area is 27th and Center, 27th and Burleigh, Milwaukee police zone. This is like a black zone, but ain't no resources here. We got Project We Sit Back right next door, but don't too many people walk in there. But this is like one of the worst areas in the neighborhood. And I live in the 53206 zip code too. And mainly because I might move, but so they shoot around there every day. But it's like, when she talked about us helping, we had a program at Wisconsin Community Service that we worked with the police called Gang Reduction and Safe Neighborhoods, and it actually was working. And then when the people came from Washington, D.C., and they put up the maps and the graphs and all that and said, "Oh, it worked," then they walked away. You know what I'm saying? So it's like they pay for the money to, Mr. McCann said, yeah, they said put a penitentiary in Milwaukee, but they know they wasn't going to do it. But we'll go through that motion. And so y'all can't say we didn't try, because Walt Pine been there over 100 years. So they tried to put a penitentiary in Milwaukee about twice, and they kicked it down because they know it wasn't going to happen. But put it out there, And I'm in part of, helping create a lot of programs. But I said I don't like creating programs that I know that ain't going to exist tomorrow. It's just here just for that moment, just to say we did something, and that's what it really is, that we put too much money into afterwards. Suit the citizen afterwards, like she said about her family member. I think it was like 1996. We used to have regular, where you earn your good time and you get out and you ain't on parole or nothing no more. You just walk away free. Then they made it a mandatory MR, and they gave you the good time coming through the door, and you get out and you be on parole. You be thinking you just getting out. Then they went to presumptive MR. So you can make it all the way to your MR, and then they can say, "Oh, no, you ain't getting out. Then they made Truth and Sentences. To me, Truth and Sentences is because people like me and him are starting to say, we ain't going to prison no more. So we ain't going to have all y'all decide y'all ain't going to prison no more. You got 40 years, so we know where you're going to be at for 40 years. So when you change your mind to be good, we see you in 40 years. You know what I'm saying? And I got a GED. You know what I'm saying? But they got all these PhDs and master's degrees, act like they can't figure it out. But we, you can figure it out. You know what I'm saying? That's what the presumption in my for.
I advocate for social programs, but I advocate more for jobs and opportunity, because that is what is lacking in our community. No, I don't want a prison in Milwaukee. I want Northwestern Mutual to be built on 27th and Capitol. I want the trolley to run down 3rd Street. I want the new hotel to be up on 35th and Capitol. I don't want it in the 3rd Ward. I don't want it on Riverwalk. I want the opportunity to come back to this city, because you can trace where the crime, the drugs, and the gangs came in when A.O. Smith, Alan Bradley, and Alice Chambers moved out. There was nothing done to replace that. We can't keep putting crime on the backs of black people when they don't have opportunity. Yes, there are criminals in our community. There are people who violate the law, but most of them don't have an opportunity to work. How many people in here now know somebody that's unemployed, been looking for work for years? Those people don't want to commit crimes. Those people don't want to stick somebody up, but then somebody's going to eat. Somebody's going to get something for their kid for Christmas. We have got to be sane and have got to have common sense on crime and stop trying to be tough on crime. We need to be tough on poverty. We need to be tough on inaccessibility. We need to be tough on ignorance.
And that's why I like it. What he said when it's like, I used to drive around and see this thing called weed and seed. So if you weed out something, you got to put something back in there. Yeah. So when you come home, it still ain't nothing there. So, but what you left too. And it's like when they say rehabilitate me, at that one point, you could never rehabilitate because I was never habilitated. Now you might could rehabilitate me, but I ain't going to do nothing wrong. But you can't rehabilitate somebody that haven't never lived a life.
And build a new Buck Stadium right across the street from here.
Business. I wanted to reiterate, I agree very much with what Pastor Briscoe has said. Right in this very neighborhood, A.O. Smith, it was thousands of employees. It was an AFL union, but it was thoroughly integrated. American Motors down at Richards and Capitol, those were thousands of jobs. UAW union, very integrated. Those jobs are gone. That's just a few of the companies. The deindustrialization of Milwaukee unquestionably has had a role in the impact of what crime has been. The fact that a young man, I started in the system in 1963, you could get jobs. Jobs were available to a very good extent. That has very much diminished. And whether it'll ever come back, I remember when Obama met with the computer guys, some of them saying it'll never come back because labor is so cheap outside the country. So that's a real, jobs are better than social programs, I agree 100%. But boy, that's a big time challenge to us.
I'd like to say, I don't think that building a prison was the answer when our community was voting and wanted a prison. It was about business, and they saw that the prison brought businesses and it brought jobs. So it wasn't that we want a prison here just so people that look like the ones being incarcerated can work in a prison. It was to provide jobs, because again, we back on it again, business. It's a business. It's a business. And that's what we were thirsty for when those industries left from Milwaukee. So replacing it with another industry with product was not making cars or casts or manifolds, but the product for the prison was flesh, human blood. So let's look at it. Unless legislation change, unless we vote people in the office to provide that legislative change, Department of Corrections, Milwaukee court system going to continue to operate, going to continue to conduct business as normal. And it's the people who have to make these changes. It's us.
Let's take another question from our audience.
My name is Marcus Lee, DOC number 364262. I've been staying in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for all my life. I'm 32 years old. I haven't seen change here yet. I mean, I'm struggling daily. And I hear a lot of voices up here talking, saying a lot of nice things, but honestly, let's be real. I mean, right now I'm facing eviction. I got to come up with this money. I got to come up with that. So what do you expect me to do? Watch my kids. My kids constantly saying, we want McDonald's. We want this. We want that. And you got to constantly teach them and tell them these. But it's up to that individual. And a lot of people don't understand us because they don't want to get to understand us. And in order to understand us, you first have to sit us down individually. Don't sit us down all together and expect each one of us to tell you our story. Because where we come from is a zoo. We got to live like that. If we don't live hardcore or tough, we're going to die. And then what? Our kids going to suffer without us. And some of us are true bloodline fathers. Me, my crime was third-degree sexual assault. That killed me. That killed me heartily because I couldn't do anything. I still can't do anything. I got it. I went to college, yeah, for about 2 or 3 years. Couldn't pay for college. Business management is what I sought because I felt that's what I needed. Then I started going into my own trade. Still no money to feed myself or to feed my family. And this is my daily attire for a total of 10 years now. This has been my daily attire. This has been my face. And I've been sitting on these streets struggling. I give myself credit because I got off of probation. I finished it, but it took me 10 years, 2 years on a bracelet. That's like 2 years. That's like you just sitting in a cell. So it's, my questions to each and every last one of you up here is, what do you do? What do you do when you have no other options and all the doors are closed in your face, and every time you're sitting there, you go into an interview, someone is telling you, yeah, I'm not going to hire you, sorry.
Well, what does he do? What does this gentleman do? What's his next step?
Well, I learned that my whole thing is, and I tell other brothers, is longevity is the key to everything, because if you could stay out here, then you could do anything. You know, I used to laugh at the guys that dig in the cans in the garbage, but then survival, when you survive, is all means necessary to survive. So it's like it's a lot of lack of opportunities out here, but it is opportunities out here. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, like what you said about your case, it is a door that they just shut closed permanently. But then I done seen brothers that overcame that too, because they never give up. You know, when you give up, that's when you fail. If you always keep trying, you can never fail. And then I also say, I always tell the brothers to knock on them doors of them people that say they gonna help you. And then you might want to take a list of the people that don't help you, so you can say, when I ask them, this is what happened. Because there's a lot of people around Milwaukee that say, oh, we'll do this for you, we'll do this for you. And I walk right up to them and say what you just said to us and say, now help me.
Great answer. I'd like to extend that. That's a great answer. And faith is the key. I think you should continue. As long as you continue to breathe, I think you should continue to thank what and who you believe as your spiritual guidance and whatever you believe God to be. Faith, man, just as long as you know you're still here for a reason, you ain't giving up. And that's what it takes, you that keep going power. And I think that, like he said, keep knocking on doors, keep going, just keep going. Because people with Milwaukee gets some of the largest amount of grant money in the faith community and different organizations in the country. So it's in here. We just have to tap into it. You just have to find where it is and hold them accountable. Those programs you see, the ones that you hear talking about, go to those places. Keep asking questions and say, listen, I need this. I give you an example. I ran out of gas going back and forth, coming back home from college, and anywhere I ran out of gas, I looked in the rural America, I looked and I went to a church. And I knocked on the door. I think about 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday. They gave me gas money to get home. Go knock on the church door. That's what we pay our tithes and our offerings for. Ain't nobody going hungry in Milwaukee. I don't see no people walking around skinny, looking like we eating.
What we have here is an undeclared state of emergency. That's what that young man just stated.
Yeah.
I don't care how many doors he knocked on. I'm sure he done knocked on some doors in those 9 years, and they keep closing. You need to go to some agencies that claim that they're going to help and join them and start working for help and change, because Milwaukee is in a state of emergency, whether they want to state it or not. There are 10 men in his block just like him who go every day and get rejected, and they need for us to stand up and demand that there's something to change, because we don't have that sense of urgency since we eat every day and we go to a house that has heat. We don't have the threat of being evicted. But somebody has got to get that urgency in their spirit and realize that there are people out there suffering, and that there are agencies that need to be pushed to the limit to do what they say they're going to do. So that's, I go along with that. Go to your church. Come to Micah. We are fighting for that effort because we have declared a state emergency at Micah.
Matter of fact, you can come. I got a couple dollars for you right now.
Hey, I'd like to say that you now I still be in the my landlord still be searching me down too now. But you know, I go through a rejection too. Even with my job is lovely, but when I go through doors and ask people to do things, they look at my criminal record, you know, MPS, everybody be like, oh, he should be working with kids, he shouldn't be doing this, he shouldn't do this. But I just don't give up. You know, one thing I refuse to give up, because if I give up and pick the pistol up, that means that's what they want. You know what I'm saying?
Let me, before we take another question from the audience, there's one that came in over social media, and I'll remind you, if you're on Twitter and you're following this, the hashtag is Prison Impact. And let me ask Michael McCann, if discretion is used in the criminal justice system, what does explain such a high rate of black incarceration?
It's for the persons that are going to have committed the crime. There's the difference between, it's tougher when you get into drugs, certain areas where it's hard to, you could see, let's say for armed robbery, most people commit armed robbery going to do time in prison. You could study from police reports what percentage, what percentage of armed robbers were black and what percentage were white, were unmasked people, and then say, okay, is there a disparity here of how many people are entering into the system? With drugs, it's much harder to do that. And where police resources are committed in the drug area, in neighborhoods where there were, and that's changed now to some extent, but where there was open-air drug trafficking, that drew police. Substantial number of arrests. We went through different chiefs of police, including a black, Art Jones, a Hispanic chief, a female chief, a male white chief. So those numbers of black arrests were very continued. From what I could see, the pattern of drug dealing was different in the inner city compared to suburbs. In the inner city, after crack, because crack meant cheap availability, high volume to make profit. And you saw open air trafficking, you saw drug houses that made it very easy for police. And complaints coming in, neighbors complaining like hell, they're selling drugs on my corner. So you had pushing police to stop it. The dealing in the suburbs, much different, much less violence. No open-air markets, dealing in taverns and so on. There's much usage going on, no question, but not the complaints, not the visibility, not the easy arrests. And so you have a volume, a high volume. I think, so it's very, when you look at it, what is the disparity? Everybody's used the word disparity, not discrimination. But the issue is discrimination in there? And that's a tough challenge. So the certain crimes, it doesn't matter. If you rape, commit murder, do armed robbery, you're going to go to prison in any place, Minnesota or anywhere else. So the when you get into nonviolent crimes, then you're looking into sentencing. Is there disparity in sentencing and so on? It's not a simple one package covers it all.
But would you think people in the suburbs would get more involved in this issue if more arrests were taking place in the suburbs?
I think you're seeing it with the heroin, the deaths. That people now suddenly, and as you said, their kids are dying from heroin. Now you're getting stories. And there is a much more of an uproar over a white kid dying in an affluent suburb than a black kid dying downtown from Milwaukee. There's no question about it. Media interest, the media focus. Wherever that death takes place, you're going to have law enforcement is going to be involved and is going to be looking at it. So there's no question in terms of should people be much more concerned? Yes. Why do you think some of the people are out in Brookfield? Why are they out there? Because they wanted to leave crime in Milwaukee. We all know that. They wanted to escape that. I don't want to hear about it. I moved out of here. Don't bother me. It's not my problem. That's why I left Milwaukee. That's a lot of the attitude out there. Make no mistake.
Let's take another question from the audience.
My name is Jafar Banda. I'm the president of Community Uprise. It's an organization, and our focus is expungements and working on bills to introduce to uplift the classifications to help with the citizenship restoration. We also are going to assist and work on a grant to help with the driver recovery here in Milwaukee County. The mass incarceration driver recovery is a need to address, and it's the two largest employment barriers in our community. And if politicians want us to vote for them, they want our support, they're going to have to address the mass incarceration, which is the new modern-day slavery. A lot of ex-offenders, their rights have restrictions on them, just like as if they were slaves, such as voting rights, employment rights, and education. And I just want us to keep in mind that we need to downsize the population of prisoners, and the only way we can do that is create job trainings for them to have, you know, job placements, so they won't be subject to the same atmosphere that we're in before they were arrested. It's like a recycling bin. A lot of people from these six primary zip codes in Milwaukee County, you know, have the highest incarceration rates, and, you know, we don't want them in the same atmosphere they were in before they were arrested. And to take away that recycling bin, we need also to address their future career paths, just so they can have equal opportunities upon extraordinary circumstances. We need to help them get their rights back, so that way they can have a chance to pursue their dreams, and they won't have to suffer for the rest of their lives. And if you look at our Governor Walker, he has ignored and neglected the right to pardon felons, which has demand to about 11 jobs on the Pardon Advisory Board, which means that he's ignoring felony rights, which are civil rights and human rights. So we probably need to call Governor Walker and ask him for an explanation, or to for him to reinstate the Pardon Advisory Board, because to me, that's like him being unprofessional and unethical with him ignoring our liberty, our civil liberties of being able to ask for a felony reinstatement for the pardon.
Let me take something off of what you just said about training. We've heard about how when you get out of prison, you can't get a job. When you're in prison, are you trained for any sort of jobs? Are you given any sort of education so that when you get out, you'll be able to go and get work?
At first, it was, you know, it was just like, well, you could press some license plates, but at first, it was like, you didn't have to do nothing. You could just sit there. But you could get a job, but most of, like, the white people got all the jobs in the penitentiary, too, the ones that there, if that's a proven fact. And it's a waiting list to get a job. So they got trainings, but I think, like, in 96, Governor Thompson was trying to create where you got to work at factories, make gloves, and you know what I'm saying? So really, it ain't no training. But then I was with someone, and I think it was one of my supervisors, that said that if it's going to take, like, GE, you know, some big-time corporation to see that it's a problem, because once they start talking about it, then they could change it, because them the employers, we just on the ground level just crying for a job. But you know, I'm like Will Allen said, go out in the yard and grow some vegetables and go outside and sell it. And then, you know, when we start doing stuff for ourselves, then people come in and try to help us, you know, because they don't want you to do it all by yourself without getting that pat on the back too.
Amen.
So that's what we need to start doing, is coming together and doing it for ourselves. And then, you know, because I tell the people at Collectivo, if you ain't going to put a Collectivo on King Drive, and then you call us and say, hey, we've been robbed three or four times, but put one down there and let the people respect you and understand that you're trying to give jobs to the community. When I was younger, I watched the King Drive, Third Street get tore up as a little bitty kid, but then nothing ever put back there. Nothing never put back there. So that takes away from us having, you know, when you go down Water Street and Brady Street and now Center Street on the east side of Houghton, it's everything is there. People got jobs in this life, but then when you come back up there, it's dead. You know, Ponderosa closed, Hoops closed. You know, we lucky to get G's Clippers back, you know, over argument over parking lot. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, it's nothing there. And when you got nothing there, you ain't got nothing up here neither.
Prison should restrict your movement, not your citizenship.
Amen.
Prison should restrict your movement, not your citizenship.
Right.
You should not lose your right to vote. You should not lose your right to participate in government. You should not lose your right to work at certain jobs. You should only lose your movement for that period of time. Prison should be... If you go to prison with an eighth grade education, you should leave with a high school diploma. If you go with a high school diploma, you should leave with a college diploma. You should be trained, taught, and educated so that you can, when you come out of prison, you have a better chance than you did when you went in. That is where we need to get smart on incarceration. We need to get smart on this, because right now, we're going to look back 50 years from now and be ashamed of what we did to our own citizens, our own people, by putting a label on them that lasted the rest of their lives and impeded them from being successful in society.
I don't want to take this short, but first of all, I want to remind our audience.
will y'all play supportive roles for expungements and the reinstatement of the Pardon Advisory Board?
Already doing that, young man.
Already. Check.
I want to remind our studio audience that the radio broadcast portion of the show will end at 11 o'clock, but we'll continue the conversation here for another half hour. But let's take one more question before we wrap up the radio portion of the program.
Okay, my question has to do with what it will take to create the political will to deal with this issue in Madison. Mr. McCann talked about the people in Brookfield moving out there to stay away from the crime in Milwaukee. We're spending 2 to 3 times what Minnesota does. You would think that that would be enough to convince people that we've got a problem that's not being addressed. What will it take to get changes made in Madison to get this problem dealt with?
Anybody want to take a crack at that?
I'm out of the system. I retired at the end of 06. I'd like to tell you that I have a positive view of it with bright expectations, and I don't. We know what happened with redistricting. The majority of votes were Democratic cast for the assembly, but the majority of assemblymen are Republicans. So the redistricting effort that was done, so if the Democrats had it, they'd have done very much the same thing. Let's not kid ourselves. I'm not saying that because of the Republicans, but the very adroitly manipulating it, I don't have, and it's a terrible thing to say, but I don't have bright expectations. The next election is, you know, Obama's been under attack since the day he was elected. There's been obstruction thrown up. Every program that he's tried has been obstructed except to bail out the banks. So And we know from the Tea Party that even moderate Republicans are under challenges in the primary system. They're challenging them in the primary. If you're not far enough to the right, we'll run a candidate against you. We won't do well in the general election because you're too far, but we'll be able to beat you in the primary. It's true of the Democrats, too. I mean, both parties are drifting, one to the left, more to the right, and it's happening in the primaries. So what's it going to take? Obviously, a major change. One thing I saw that was hopeful, this gentleman, I think his name is pronounced Nygren, he's a Republican, his daughter has had drug problems. Then you see suddenly programs supportive of drug treatment and so on. That is to me, that was a positive thing. I don't relish his experience. I feel sorry for him and his family, but that brought, for people who that's a remote experience, what drug problems in Milwaukee, a remote experience. And this last gentleman, the one before him, they couldn't get a job. We have which is hailed as a positive development. You can get on a computer and find out who's got a record. Make no mistake, employers are checking that. Mr. Briscoe knows that, Pastor Briscoe. Once you got that criminal record, that's a mark. There's a law that says you can't consider that record unless it's connected with a job. A person convicted of child molesting will never get a job driving a school bus. We know that, and everybody agreed with that. But that shouldn't prevent him from getting a job running a stamp press at some factory. But does it or doesn't it? I think it's done covertly, that's going on all the time, that people are saying who's got a record and who doesn't. And that gentleman we all know people like him that have tried like hell, got a family, really want a job, and have this terrible difficulty. That's going on below the radar. People are getting checked and not getting jobs because they have a criminal record, even though it's not connected to the job.
That will be the last word on the broadcast portion of today's Project Milwaukee event, but we invite you to weigh in on the conversation by visiting us at facebook.com/WUWM Radio.
We also hope you'll be able to join us in person for our culminating event for Project Milwaukee, this series. It's going to be a town hall meeting at the downtown Milwaukee Public Library on Tuesday evening, May 20th. We'll have details to follow on WUWM.com/Project Milwaukee. Now, to remind you of some other places you can hear what happened today and see some other things, we're going to have the full 90 minutes of this discussion, the hour and then the half hour that's going to follow, on MPTV by this Thursday. So that's online, mptv.org, this Thursday. You can see all of this. And on March 19th, we're going to have a special edition of Black Nouveau at 6:30 on Channel 10, where I will be discussing this issue and some other issues with 3 former inmates who are going to give me their reflections on their time in prison and why they were there.
Thank you to Everett Marshburn and the MPTV staff and Annalise Henzel and the WUWM staff for the technical and logistical support for today's broadcast.
And special thanks to Claiborne Benson and the Wisconsin Black Historical Society Museum, where we are right now, for hosting our live broadcast. And to the audience who joined us here this morning, thank you very much. I'm Joanne Williams.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Thank you for listening.